This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Bruins have made another couple of moves today, including on their roster, which you're listening on the radio, you heard. If you're watching on NBC Sports Boston, you did not. I'll give you that. And the Bruins might be working on something late here. So there's this.
This is breaking sports news.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So this was just tweeted from Elliot Friedman, blue check mark. He says he believes Boston and Chicago are talking Tommy Wingles if done in time. Wingles, a forward in Chicago.
Okay, Wingles? Anybody? Wingles?
No idea.
Wingles?
No, isn't he the maintenance guy in the building?
I don't mean to let you down. That's Mingles.
Oh, sorry.
I don't mean to let you down out there with the breaking news sounder. We have a philosophy. You hit that button and then ask for forgiveness later. So if that doesn't constitute breaking news, I don't know what to tell you. The thing is, I don't feel like they need centers. I don't think they're short on centers. I like their centers and the way they've deployed them. Bergeron, Krejci, Nash, Achari, or who's ever, you know, centering that fourth line, which has just been terrific, Corrali and Schaller. I don't need another center in there. I don't. And Tommy Wingles is a fringe guy. He's not an upgrade over any of them. So he's a fifth center, which is fine. If someone gets hurt, you need a guy who can play center. But, you know, he's just been in the NHL here. It feels like he's been most of his career in San Jose. Not an every-game guy. This year in Chicago, 7 goals, 5 assists, and 57 games for the Blackhawks. So I don't know what kind of role he's playing.
He's 45% on the dot, Felge.
It's not good. He averages 11 minutes, 21 seconds a night. So he's, you know, he's a fringe guy.
Feels like a penalty killer. He had a couple of shorties, right?
Okay, so there you go.
So maybe it's something like that?
So this is a guy that you, if someone gets hurt, he's the next guy up. He's an NHL player. Fine. No problem.
I hope he give up nothing more than like a sixth.
Exactly. So this now goes back to the Nick Holden thing, where you gave up a third round pick and Rob O'Gara. And again, I'm not telling you Rob O'Gara is Bobby Orr or anything here, but he's someone who started the year with the team, a year ago, and he's sort of on the fringe of the thing. Young player and a third round pick for a guy in Nick Holden who's your eighth defenseman. And now the Bruins today have sent down Matt Greslick, sent him down to Providence. Which, again, leads me to believe...
Well, this Greslick thing is being reported. He's likely assigned to Providence to be eligible for the AHL playoffs, most certainly be called up before Tuesday.
Oh, it's just a technicality thing.
Yeah.
In case they need him for the AHL playoffs. All right, so fine. But still, I don't get...
But if you got to take, go. You sounded like you had something...
Well, no, I'm just saying...
No, you feel like they overpaid for Holden, given what his role is.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, like, you know, to me... I'll give him a little grace period here just to see maybe there's, you know, maybe they're just trying to figure out how it works. You know, because the other thing Cassidy said at the time of the deal, I just thought some of the comments he made. Again, one was the type of defense they play versus the Rangers, who are probably more a man-on-man team. And then how does he work with some of his partners? We need to see some of that. So there are going to be deficiencies in his game that they're worried about matching him up with the right guy. And maybe they're assessing some of that in the, you know, the practices they had in Toronto. They were there for a couple of days. So maybe some of that. Like, I'll give him a little latitude there until we see the guy. But I also think, don't you look at that deal and the Vetrano deal hand in hand? Because I do.
Yeah, sure.
Like I say, ultimately, it's Vetrano and O'Gara for Holden and moving up in the draft. Right?
I know, but they still could have gotten the third for Vetrano without spending it on Holden.
Right. See, I think they were sort of hand in hand, but, you know, what do I know?
When they traded for Holden, I thought, okay, upgrade that third pair, upgrade on Greslick on the left side. Good. Again, you're not trading for Bobby Orr, but you're trading for someone who's better than your sixth guy. And you've replaced your sixth defenseman. That matters. That guy's going to play. And he doesn't play. So I'm just curious about that whole thing and what their plan is there on defense. They do have too many defensemen, which is fine. And I don't mind having a good viable guy on the ninth floor. It's just, you know, what did you have to give up to get him? Do we have something, Jim?
This is breaking sports news.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, this is certainly not good news for the Bruins. Bob McKenzie, TSN Canada, just tweeting, Ryan McDonagh will be heading to Tampa Bay from the New York Rangers, assuming it made the deadline.
Oof.
It's pending the trade call, but again, it looks like Ryan McDonagh is going to go to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oof.
So I was just about to do this. I was about to look at the landscape across the East and how it impacts the Bruins. So they make their big move in Rick Nash. Your first-round opponent is probably Toronto. They pick up Thomas Plekanec, which is an interesting, you know, that's a guy you're really familiar with, and he's really familiar with you versus, you know, or all those matchups you had with Montreal. Again, this is a centerman who goes toe-to-toe with Bergeron and, you know, sort of neutralizes some of the face-off advantages that you have. There's a lot of institutional knowledge against you. I think that's a nice move for Toronto, just as it relates to you. Just, you know, have Plekanec there in that Toronto lineup against you in the first round gets my attention. And then you look at two other teams, and then if the Bruins advance there, they'll probably get Tampa in the next round. Tampa?
Wagon.
Scary.
Wagon.
They're probably going to have the league MVP in Nikita Kucherov. They've got Steven Stamkos, healthy and productive. You've still got Tyler Johnson, of course. You've got one of my favorite defensemen in the league in Victor Hedman, who's just tremendous. You have this Mikhail Sergachev, who they got from the Canadiens. Those idiot Canadiens. Oh, they've made so many bad deals. The Sergachev guy has worked out as a rookie. He's a factor on that team. Braden Point, I mean, you just look at that team is loaded. So that's Toronto potentially in the second round. And if you even survive that, now what are you looking at? Pittsburgh, who adds Derek Brassard? Pittsburgh goes 1-2-3 at center. Crosby, Malkin, Derek Brassard. Like, there's some real iron there. And so this is sort of why Murray said, you know, for the Bruins to consider this trade deadline a win, they have to go to the conference finals. I don't know, man.
Did Washington end up getting Carlson? Did that happen?
No, Erik Karlsson is staying put. That's been confirmed from multiple sources.
Okay, but if McDonough goes through to Tampa, anything latest on that? If McDonough goes through to Tampa, holy smokes.
So this Tommy Wingles, it's official. This is being reported from 670 The Score in Chicago. Tommy Wingles has been traded to the Bruins for a fifth-round pick.
All right.
So that's right. So if they had traded Nick Holden for a fifth-round pick, great. Fifth-round pick, put him on the ninth floor if someone gets hurt. He's your NHL-ready guy. Boom. Love it. Mean it. Okay. A third in Ogara for a guy who can't... Greslick's getting sent down for whatever reason. They play both Miller and McQuaid the other night, and Holden's still sitting there. Holding it, if you will. So I don't know. Like, I don't fully get that one.
Yeah, but you won the Florida trade with Vetrano for a third.
So this is what Maz just said.
Nick Hurts from Holden?
Exactly. You're just holding it there on the ninth floor. So the run, yes, the Bruins, their ceiling just got so much better there with Rick Nash. Like, again, in the here and now, they got much better, much better. And I love playing with the lineup and where he could play and how he fits with Krejci and just the little snippets last night. The Rick Nash package was out there last night, and I just, so good, good, good. If they lose to Tampa in the second round, that's no great fail. I'm sorry, Tampa's better than you.
See, I still feel overall big picture with the Bruins. My opinion of them hasn't really changed all that much, given all that's happened here in the last day. Like, if I don't expect them to win the Cup. They better win a round, though. They better win at least a round, then we'll see where we are. If they lose in the first round,
they got to beat Toronto. There's no question about it. Tampa, if Tampa's healthy, Kucherov, Stamkos, Tyler Johnson, Victor Hedman, Ryan McDonagh, if that thing goes through, come on. They're ahead of you. They're just ahead of you. Even with Nash, they're ahead of you.
I mean, if they put their five best players on the ice, go toe-to-toe with Pittsburgh's best five.
Like, that might be the most talented team in the league. It's close.
Like, that's ridiculous, that level of talent. You're talking those five with Pittsburgh's five.
Okay, so reaction to the trade deadline, the Nash trade. We've got still Rob Gronkowski on the table and the J.D. Martinez news this morning. All of it on a Reentry Monday. Right back to your calls, I promise, after these words.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blood force drama running right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
When you made out that list, was Boston top of the list? Or?
Yes.
It was?
Yes.
Okay. Why so?
Well, when they first asked me, I would obviously go, you know, wherever. I wasn't going to hold them hostage or anything like that. But, you know, I wanted to go to a place that wanted me and a place that had a great chance to win. And, you know, I think Boston fits both those perfectly. I just want to bring my style of hockey, try to be a big power forward, bring some offense, be responsible defensively, kind of the complete player. But it's you know, I haven't really been in this situation coming in mid-season, so it'll be fun to see what happens. But at the same time, there's such a good team, and they have so many good players, is you just kind of want to see where you fit in and not ruffle any feathers.
Some big moves across the league today. Tampa loads up with Ryan McDonagh. They get the left shot defenseman from the Rangers. Tough sledding through the East, man. You got Pittsburgh sitting there. They had Derek Brassard. You got Tampa potentially in the second round, they get Ryan McDonough to what's been the best team in the league wire-to-wire this year. And if you ever get to the Capitals, I don't know if they did anything really of note, but they own you. They own that ass. So you expect a deep run, it's not going to be easy unless some of these teams get nine, and you know, unless there's some upsets out there and clear the path a little bit for you. They have a hard road after you get past that first round.
If they can get to the final four of the conference and it's Pittsburgh, Tampa, and Washington in there with them,
see you later.
I mean, you know, like, how do you expect them to get through that?
I don't expect them to get through that. Okay.
By the way, I just saw this online. Joe Morrow, remember him?
Sure.
He went for a fourth.
Okay, so this is my issue. Joe Morrow is an eighth defenseman. He's a seventh, eighth defenseman. He went for a fourth. Thank you. He went from Montreal. He was with Montreal, right?
Yes. He went to the Jets. Correct.
So perfect. Exactly. You get Nick Holden for a third and a young defenseman in your system. No. I don't. So it's a small thing. You know, as much as I like the Vetrano thing, like, I thought that was a real steal on the part of the Bruins on a lower level move. The Holden thing feels like just the opposite. Feels like you gave up too much for that kind of piece. All right, back to the phones. Tim and Nashville, go ahead. What do you got?
Michael, I love the trade. It breathes life into Krejci, and it gives him the flexibility because you noticed that game in Toronto and in Buffalo, the pace. I believe it gives them the flexibility to move Nash up and down on the offensive side. The bad side of it is what you hit with Holden. Chara looks like a traffic cone. I mean,
I disagree. Chara's been good. Just give me one thing at a time. The Nash trade and the flexibility and what it does for Krejci. I think that's a real consideration. Fluto wrote this yesterday, and I thought it was a good point. Through 41 games, Krejci is averaging only 16:45 of ice time per game. It is the least he has played since his rookie year.
Wow.
And you know why that is? Because Cassie doesn't totally trust Ryan Spooner and Jake DeBrusk in defensive situations. You have a rookie on one side and sort of a soft, you know, offensive-minded player on the other, and he looks at that line and says, I can't put you out there in defensive zone starts in the third period. I can't, you know, and so that has hurt Krejci. You give Nash to Krejci, and Nash is. He's good in his own end, and he's a three-zone player. He plays D, and he does all that stuff.
Penalty kills, too, right?
He killed penalties in New York. I don't know if he does it here, but you give Nash to Krejci, Cassie's less apt to take him off the ice in those defensive situations, so having Nash here gets Krejci on the ice more. That's a win. I don't want them moving Nash from Krejci. I don't want Nash with Bergeron and Marchand. I don't. Mostly because I don't want Pasternak with Krejci. People always say, oh, they're countrymen, couple of Czechs playing together, they speak the same language, blah, blah, blah. They play differently. This is now Pasternak's fourth year, right? He and Krejci have never really worked. They've never really played together and clicked together. It doesn't work. They play at different paces. You know, Krejci wants to slow it down and grind it out and possession in the zone and all that, and Pasternak is flying all over the place. They don't fit together. So I don't want Pasternak with Krejci. Pasternak works with Marchand and Bergeron. If, however, the bullets start flying in the playoffs and, you know, it just gets more physical, you do have the option to put Nash up there or Backus up there, and I like that flexibility. I told you, I think I don't worry about the pace getting too much. I worry about the physicality getting too much. And if the physicality gets too much for DeBrusk and or Pasternak or anything like this, but I think if it gets too much for DeBrusk, you can move Backus up with Krejci, and you move Nash over to his natural side on the left, and now you're Nash, Krejci, Backus. Like, that's a heavy playoff, you know, that, like, I like the thought of that line if things get physical and heavy in the postseason. So I like that flexibility.
I mean, that feels a little more like Krejci, Lucic, and Horton, doesn't it?
It does. It is.
Yeah.
And it is. So I like that flexibility, but I'm not messing with that first line unless Pasternak really starts playing like a jackass. It's re-entry Monday. We have the NHL trade deadline and Rick Nash on the board. We have J.D. Martinez this morning on the board, and Rob Gronkowski from the weekend tweets out, foresee your own future, control your own temptations, and your destiny will not just be reached, Maz. It will just be starting. Chris in Rockland, what does that mean?
I don't know what that means, but I think Gronk would be great in the WWE, but acting's another story, but what do you guys think of him, like, in a Naked Gun role, scary movie,
yes,
you know, that O.J. role?
Yes.
Because who didn't like O.J., you know, before the murders?
Okay, as Nordberg, he was fine. He nailed that role.
Alleged murders.
Yeah,
alleged.
So he, I don't know if you can make a living doing that, though, doing walk-ons on movie and sort of, I mean, and Simpson was a little bit more than that.
Oh, no, no. He had bigger roles.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, yeah. He had bigger roles. But Gronk, we're talking about, like, borderline cameos, aren't we?
Yes. But what if he, I don't know, what if he earns his, you know, what if he develops a little something in the wrestling world, like Johnson did, and a lot of these guys do, because it's borderline acting, and you just sort of develop your persona and develop your game.
He don't have it.
You don't
no,
think
The
Murray.
Rock, you could tell immediately that there's something there, and he's made
no, you couldn't.
Oh, come on, Jimmy. Yeah, you could.
No, his debut show in 1996 at Madison Square Garden, where he's smiling and the people hated him.
All right, well, you're the wrestling guy. I'm not going to argue with it. But when he was cutting promos,
and he floundered around for about a year and a half until he finally started talking in the third person.
I'm sticking
with this.
And
then he got it. And he had facial expressions coming on the camera, but it took him time.
So you're saying
it took him a year in Memphis in developmental, and then a year and a half in WWE, and then he got it.
He was in the G League, Murray.
Yeah.
Don't mess with Stu on this stuff.
No, I know. No. This is his expertise. Yes, anything that has to do with wrestling.
That's all I've got.
But with Gronk, I'm sorry, I don't see it. You're not going to turn him into like a legitimate Hollywood action star.
To
it's
Arnold,
not going
to
happen.
Turning him to Arnold.
So, well, so you're saying The Rock didn't have the eyebrow
The
thing?
Rock didn't have it instantly. Huh. It took him some time to develop it. They did a show, they being the WWE, did a show last night where they put a microphone, a live mic, in Ronda Rousey's hands, and oof, is she bad. And they've invested a lot of money in her, and they're going to coach her up. And I bet a year from now, we're going to see Ronda Rousey be really good as far as a promo gal.
The Rock had to spend time in developmental.
He did. In Memphis.
Memphis.
Yeah, in Memphis.
Jerry the King Lawler.
So listen, this is no joke as it relates to the Patriots. I'm telling you. I think this stuff with Gronkowski is real. It is not just a ploy. I think he has this stuff. And I think it's real. And I don't think he steps off the NFL field, Murray, and is an action star right away. But it's something that develops over time. And like as Stu said, if Gronkowski's really investing in his future, then he starts out in developmental, whatever, and he becomes what he becomes. But I think all that stuff is there for him.
Do you think Patriots fans are taking it seriously?
Nope.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I do.
Oh,
I think
really?
That, yeah.
I bring up the wrestling thing with Gronkowski and all my mentions burn up. Oh, stick to wrestling. He's not leaving football.
No, no. So this is what I'm saying. That was Maz's question. Are the Patriots fans taking the threat of him leaving seriously?
Yes.
I'd say no.
Oh, see, I don't think they're taking the threat of him leaving seriously either. I think that
Stu, you're contradicting yourself. When you say he has a chance to go to wrestling, and the fans are saying they're not taking it seriously. They think he's going to return to the Patriots. That's what you're saying. You don't know that's what you're saying.
I don't know what I'm saying.
But that's what you're saying.
Stick to wrestling.
It sounds like you're on the same side of it. I think Patriots fans are saying he's not leaving. He's coming back.
Exactly.
And the day that Gronk, boy, what a blow that would be if he actually went. What a blow.
With Edelman coming back off that ACL at 31, 32, however old he is. I think people, overlook what those ACLs are in that first year back. It's not pretty usually.
Brady will be pissed if that happens.
So this
they're
going
to have to go out and get two tight ends.
This is why the Patriots have to pay Gronkowski. They have to. They pushed all their chips into the middle of the table with Tom Brady. That's it. You made your bed. This could have been a transitional phase for you, and you could have dealt off Brady for picks. You could have dealt off Gronkowski for picks. You could have moved on from Belichick and given it to John and done the whole thing and just turned the thing over with Garoppolo, and you could have done that and really set yourself up for the future. And they didn't. They did just the opposite. So you can't let Gronkowski go. You have to pay Brady now. You've got to keep McDaniels. The cliche of maximizing the window, something we've been saying for 5 years. Now it's real.
Oh, no,
you have to.
They backed themselves into a corner with this. Once Garoppolo goes out the door, what are you going to do now? Do a slow rebuild?
So here's what Tommy Kern raised this, and it's just an interesting thought. And that is, if you're the Patriots, you get out ahead of this and trade Rob Gronkowski. In other words, Rob's only going to stay if you really make it worth his while, and you're not willing to make it worth his while, meaning you're not willing to go to $15, $16 million a year. But there's another team in the league who will. Would you trade him for a first-round pick? For a high second?
Well, don't you think that Gronk has just killed his own market by doing what he's done?
No.
I do.
I don't.
Why would you trade for Gronk now? Like, Gronk will look at it and say, I'm not going to play for whoever you trade me to.
Huh?
In other words, you can't trade me because if you do, I'm out. I'm going to go to something else.
Oh, no, no. If he's seriously leaving, then right. You're porked. You're totally porked. I'm telling you, if there's a number at which he'll stay, but you're not willing to go to it.
And another team is.
Do you do that?
Ooh,
if there's another team out there willing to give him $16 million a year, wide receiver money, elite wide receiver money, and you're not, and that team's willing to give you a low first, high second, do you do it?
I mean, if you're not willing to go to the money, yeah.
Of course you do it.
Yeah, because what are your alternatives? But, don't pay them and have them leave and go do something else. You get nothing for
them.
Well,
let me tell you, they won't. They won't. They should, like they should have moved on from Brady. But they won't for the same reason they didn't move on from Brady, and that is Kraft won't bring himself to do it.
Even with Gronk.
We won't do it. He won't do it. Robert Kraft does not want to be the one responsible for Rob Gronkowski finishing his Hall of Fame career somewhere else. And, oh, by the way, Tommy probably wants him to stay. So Tommy, at this stage, is getting whatever he wants, don't you think?
So the Brady thing is legit. The Brady thing is legit. But if Gronk has reached the point where he doesn't want to play and they can for them and they can trade him and he'll be willing to play and they can get something for him, oh, to hold on to him would be a big mistake.
Agreed.
Huge mistake.
Agreed.
That one feels easy to me. Like, you know, because you can
There's
always
no
go
way
to,
they'll do it.
You can go to Brady at the very least and say, Tom, he wasn't... if they don't want to pay him, they have to trade him.
And Brady says, guys, how much money have I left on the table over the years for you people? How many times have I given you an extra couple million dollars on your budget or your cap or however you want to look at it, add it all up, and give them a few extra million and keep them here?
Okay, but then that's
and
a different argument.
And at that point, Robert says, okay, Tommy.
Yeah, so at that point, they cave in and give him the money. What if they're insistent on not giving him the money?
I'm telling you that they'll cave. But Gronkowski has him. Gronkowski has him, and he's, you know, this leverage is real. And the Brady thing is they being the Crafts sort of back themselves into a corner. You've got to go all in now. You've got to go all in with these guys because you kept Brady as opposed to choosing that transitional path.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Do you think that the DH role actually might be beneficial for you, the ability to go back in between at-bats to review things, between innings, work on things between at-bats? Could that actually be a good thing for you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I kind of did that when I played right field, too.
I mean, again, this is as soon as you bring up the DHing. Oh, no, I did that in right field, too. Like, so you have McAdam there asking him, can DHing actually even be better for you, given your cerebral approach to hitting?
He doesn't want
to
DH.
No, he doesn't. He wants nothing to do with it. And so, like, I wonder how this one is going to work out. Like, you know, have the Red Sox told him he's playing left field and there's another deal they're going to make in camp that we don't know about? Is Bradley going?
So let me ask you, aren't they better off that way? If you can get a bat for J.D. Martinez, I mean, excuse me, for Jackie Bradley, you get a little more offense. Don't you think you net out a better team?
Yes.
I mean,
if you could trade Jackie Bradley for, I don't know, a good reliever or something.
How much worse are you in center with Betts there? Or is it Benintendi who plays
Probably
center?
Benintendi is my guess.
Why?
Because I think they love Betts in right field at Fenway, and as a right fielder, he's an elite defender. And so, you know, when I say elite, you know, way above average. Like, I don't know if he's he's not the best right fielder I've ever seen. But I think that they would play Benintendi in center and be fine there.
Okay, J.D. Martinez in left, Benintendi in center, Betts in right. Defensively, how much worse are you?
At Fenway, you're not much worse at all. In Yankee Stadium, you'd have some problems, probably, because you have Martinez running around out there.
I'm sure the nerds would make a case that you get that much worse defensively.
How much? Define that,
his
nerds.
His speed and his defense.
No, nerds, define it. If you go from Bradley to Benintendi in center, is that 4 runs a year? 18 runs a year? Nerds, give me the number. And then how many wins does that translate to?
Good question. Like, I think Benintendi can play center at an acceptable level in the big leagues.
And then you get Moreland in the lineup more. You get Hanley in the lineup. It all fits.
Sure.
It all fits better.
Yes. Because Bradley, to me, is a bottom third of the lineup kind of guy. But honestly, I don't
think... He's your 9 hitter. He should be anyway.
I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to keep them all. That'd be my guess. You know, and again, I'm just going with my gut. But you know, you never know what they've told Martinez, or maybe they lied to Martinez to get him to sign, and they're going to DH him 80% of the time. Like, there's just no way to know.
Okay, so we have the J.D. Martinez stuff, which finally became official this morning. We have the Rick Nash trade. We have the Rob Gronkowski tweets. And that situation, again, which I think are real. Charlie in Fall River on Rick Nash, though. Go ahead, Charlie.
Mike, let me ease your fears on this lingering kid. I did a lot of reading on him this weekend, and he projects to be a stay-at-home defenseman. The problem is he's really small. And in 33 games in Minnesota this year, he's a minus player.
So hold on. I don't, you know, he puts up, I don't care what his numbers are in the WCHA or the Big Ten or whatever they call it now.
Right.
Like that doesn't translate. How big is he? What are his dimensions?
I don't know what his exact size, but I saw a video, and he looks like the size of Torey Krug. He's a small guy that projects to be a stay-at-home defenseman.
6 foot, 200.
His NHL is a second-pairing D.
Okay, so I'm sorry. He projects as a second-pairing D?
That's a ceiling in the NHL. According to all the experts, the people in the know, and he's very small for a stay-at-home defenseman. If you're going to be a stay-at-home defenseman in the NHL, you got to have size, and he doesn't have it.
6 feet, 200?
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. It's not huge, but don't say he's Torey Krug.
Krug's 5'9", for crying out. So's Grizzlick.
Right.
They're tiny.
So if he projects as a second-pairing D, that's a real player. That's a top-four D. Lindgren is the one. I initially said I don't want to give up that first-round pick, and the more I think of it, the more I think the bigger give might have been Lindgren. I really do. And so, you know, we'll see. Is it a worthwhile gamble? Yes, it's a worthwhile gamble. I just don't like to, so this caller and others have just sort of treated it like, they didn't really give anything up. That's not true. That you are not at a stage in your development where you can just leak away first-round picks and good left-shot D who project as NHL players. You're not in that position yet.
See, the pick bothers me a little more because I feel pretty good about the way Sweeney is drafted and the way they've added players. So I look at that and say, it's another guy you can plug into the system, and who knows what that grows into. And I sort of like the idea of having that steady stream coming through. Now, look, at the same time, you can't make a deal unless you give something up. But I do like that. Like, I feel like between Vakanainen, Lozon, they have guys in their system that are left-shot Ds that are coming. So they could.
You don't put Zboril on that list because he's on that list too?
No, I don't, because it doesn't feel like he is coming. It feels like that one is going nowhere.
They whiffed on that.
It feels that way. But even with the other two, I look at it and say, okay, you know, you get two others there between, you know, the two we just mentioned. And so you can trade one of those three. Like, that's what you should do.
Look, just don't pretend like it's some sort of steal or that it's cheap. It's not. And it shouldn't be. It's that these deadline deals are not cheap. You don't get bargains at the deadline. You know, you have to overpay a little bit to add to go on a run. So that's what they did. Just don't act like this is some sort of nothing give. They gave.
See, I would like to know, too, like, it'd be great if you could know sort of the progression of the talks. Did the Rangers start out asking for Vakanainen and Lozon? And the Bruins said, no, but we'll give you Lindgren?
Right.
Like, you know, and then, okay, but now we want a first, too. Like, I'd love to know how that sort of progressed, but I think they protected the right guys.
So the first, I think, came in there because the Rangers agreed to take on Matt Beleski, which was, that's a good part of the deal. You're out from half of that money. That gives you more flexibility. You got out of that horrible contract. So I think that's what, you know, when you ask the Rangers to take on a contract like that, I think you have to give up more, and they did. Ben in the car, your thoughts.
I was like, oh, well, first on the Nick Holden thing, I wonder, I don't know off the top of my head if he's got any additional term, but if that may have been part of the high asking price for the third-round pick and
O'Gara. He doesn't. He's up this year.
Oh, okay. So he's just a pure rental. All right. Well, I was thinking if he had any additional term, maybe they're thinking of re-signing him, getting McQuaid or Miller off the books. Maybe he's a slight upgrade at a cheaper price, or at least same player at a cheaper price. But in addition to that, my conspiracy theory is maybe he gave a little bit more, and I don't want to give Don Sweeney too much credit, but maybe he gave a little more on the Holden deal so that he could come back and could tell the Rangers no on DeBrusque, no
on Heinen. I got you. Let me stop you. It's a quid pro quo. It's part of the whole deal. In which case, I feel differently about that. Like, it's all part of one deal, but they just sort of split them because they were trying to still figure out the other pieces, but it was all going to be part of one bigger deal. Nash and Holden for Beleski, Spooner, O'Gara, a third, blah, blah, blah. Maybe I'll look at that differently.
I mean, I don't rule that out. Right? How can you rule that out when you're talking about the same teams?
On its own, a third and O'Gara for a guy who's your eighth defenseman right now is not good value. But it's small. I mean, this is a smaller concern. I don't want to spend too much time on this. It just strikes me. I want to see Holden when they traded for him. I'm like, oh, maybe an upgrade on the third pair. And the guy can't get on the ice, even though they're benching Carlo, and even though Grzelcyk, you know, has been good, but I don't know. I just thought that I thought the upgrade was there for Grzelcyk, and maybe not. Another Bruins item from the weekend I want to get to. The disputed goal Saturday night in Toronto. Did you see it? How'd you feel about the call? Did you feel the Bruins got jobbed? And, oh, the crying and the caterwauling from the Bruins and their broadcast partners at Nesson. Through the roof. I'm going to get to this right after these words.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
Hainsey's drop scores! Ron Hainsey!
Clearly
I'm of the opinion that it's the action of the offensive player that knocks McAvoy into the Bruin goaltender, Tuukka Rask, and he's not allowed the opportunity to get square to the shot. Clearly, Jack, clearly. If there's no goaltender interference, Rask's at the top of the blue paint at least a half a second before this shot comes from Haynes.
Yep.
To me, that constitutes goaltender interference.
After video review, the call on the ice stands. We have a goal.
Welcome to the NHL's equivalent of the NFL's did he actually catch that pass or not?
What you're saying is the NHL said a month ago that was interference.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Not that they got it right.
So why isn't it tonight?
That's fine, but don't say that I told them they got it right. What I'm saying is their interpretation now, and you know I love you, but don't say that. The interpretation now is that let things go. It's a judgment thing. That's the way they're calling it now. They won't admit it, but that call... They looked at that thing. They knew it was close. The referees and the people back in Toronto determined, I'm guessing, that they felt that Tuukka Rask had time to get back to make that save.
Did you get a piece of that with your glove?
No, I just couldn't get there on time because somebody interfered with me.
I was pushed into Dukes.
Surprised it wasn't goalie interference there?
Very, very. I mean, I don't know what goaltender interference really is. I mean, I know I'm not the only one. We've seen it work in our favor. We've seen it work against us now. There really just isn't a fine line. So, I don't know. I guess just get behind it. It's over now.
All right, so that happened Saturday night. Sort of receded to the background after the trade deadline. But that's, you know, tight game. This is your first-round playoff opponent, probably, Toronto. Competitive game up and down the ice. Minute and a half left. Forget the player who it was, number 11, in your crease, sort of knocks McAvoy into Rask a little bit. And Hainsey scores from the point. Toronto wins. Minute and a half left in the game. Oh, and the caterwauling on Nesson. Good God, the caterwauling. And then the caterwauling from the team, from Tuukka Rask. And so you heard from Rask and Charlie McAvoy there. I think it was the right call. I think the goal should have stood.
So I was at the game Saturday, and
you were in Toronto.
I did. I went over there for the weekend, and I went up there for the weekend, and that's the corner. I was in that corner to Rask's left, and I can tell you in real time, I didn't think it was goaltender interference. And then I saw Rask start bitching about it, and I went, but they never showed a replay in the arena.
Oh, no, they never do.
I mean, it's irritating. Oh, God, was that irritating. It was going bananas over it. And then, you know, I just think... To me, ultimately, my answer is no. My answer ultimately is no interference, and the goal's good.
If that's no longer a goal in the NHL, that's not what you want. You don't want that. If 11 there ran straight into Rask, fine. But he was jostling with McAvoy and Chara in front of the net, and McAvoy lost the jostle. McAvoy gave up ground. He lost the battle.
See, that play started. I don't know how much they showed on TV in the replay. I mean, in real time, you know, during the game. In that play, Chara and McAvoy got tangled up with each other a little bit in there, too. And so, like, I thought the Bruins kind of got a little clumsy in front of their own net on that one.
They were all night, by the way. So they got clumsy in front of their net. Then McAvoy loses the physical battle. And, oh, by the way, Rask still had a chance to cover the other post, and he didn't fight hard enough to get over this. This is one of these knocks against Rask that I think are valid, that sometimes he doesn't really battle through the traffic and through the wash. You know, he's positionally sound, and we know all the things that he's good at, but when there's a scrum in there, he's not someone that... Sometimes he's someone who he just sort of gives into the scrum, and he doesn't physically battle through all the traffic. And I thought that was one of those cases. Just flip it. If the Bruins scored that goal and they took it off the board,
I'd be out of my mind.
You'd be howling.
I'm looking at a gif of it now.
Come on.
And 11 is essentially at the beginning of it. He's sandwiched by Chara and McAvoy.
McAvoy
looks like a klutz. He falls over. And you're right. Rask has enough time to get over there.
But Rask still has a time to get over. And he doesn't. But just the caterwauling between Jack and Brick and then the postgame show. It's like, guys.
Tim Peel and the NHL hates us.
Good God. Oh, I can't stand the hometown stuff. I hate it when we do it on NBC Sports Boston. We're horrible, too. We're just as bad. I don't mean to exempt us. We're a joke. Or when Zoe gets going on the refs. Like, again, I'm not telling you, this is just a Nesson thing. It happens at plenty of places I work, too. But, damn, I just hate it. It's like, give me a break. I never heard DeBeers think it should come off the board. Jimmy, do we ever go back and listen to DeBeers? I don't even know. Maybe we'll give it a listen. I have no idea. Because I was watching Nesson, and I just remember the commentary at the time. I'm like, give me a break. And then Cassidy does his post game with the reporters. And I say to myself, thank God for Bruce Cassidy. At least.
No, he got it right because they didn't deserve to win the game. I was just going to say, if you're going big picture now, they didn't deserve to win the game. But as usual, he's on it.
Well, and thank God the coach is the one that is the voice of reason.
Frustrating that the goaltender interference calls the play seemingly decides the outcome.
No, I mean, you know, you win some, you lose some. And knows if we're generating more stuff around their net, maybe those calls go our way. I think that was an issue tonight for us. We weren't around the front of their net enough. So, no, I'm not. I mean, you know, they made a good play to win the possession of the puck, and they got it to the net. It's up to us to be a little harder as well.
Overall in the second period, what kind of happened there? The game seemed to get away from you a little bit.
Well, that's it. You said it. What happened was they were a lot better than us.
Thank you. Thank you. All the crying from the announcers. It takes the coach to come out and say, well, they were better than us. You know, if we create traffic in front of their net like they created in front of ours, maybe we'd get one of those too. You win some, you lose some.
In the final two periods of that game, the Bruins got outshot 24-8.
And we're going
to 16-2 in the second period.
I'm going to cry about the call?
And the fact of the matter is the three goals they got in that game, or at least the two Marchand goals in particular, the third one, Spooner made a great play to set it up and fed DeBrus was a great goal. The other two?
I think they had two shots in that period or something.
They
like
did.
That.
Two shots. Two. That's it. But the Marchand goals were, I would even say, you know, I know they had a bunch of shots in the first period the Bruins did, but he buried those. I mean, he got the puck in the slot both times and roofed one, and the other one he sniped from over the goalie's glove. He absolutely freaking picked corners on those. Like, I would say, I don't know that they, after that, they generated consistent pressure all night.
Good Lord, though. Yeah, thank God for Cassidy. Win some, you lose some. Close call. Sometimes that goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. If we're screening around their net like they're in front of ours, maybe we get one of those. We need to be better. Although you just said it, Conroy. Yeah, they were better than us. Thank you, God. And they were. So that's your first-round matchup. I think that's a great matchup. There's something stylistically about the way those two teams play. It's going to be a good series.
Toronto's scary. I told you this. Toronto scares the crap out of me. I said this weeks ago, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I was at the game on Saturday.
No, they're fast.
Their forwards are awesome.
Yeah.
They're forward, and Matthews didn't play Saturday. But their forwards are, they're fast. They get this Finnish kid, number 24, whose name I'm not even going to try to pronounce. He can fly. He is fast. And this Hyman kid doesn't score a lot, but he's tough on the puck, hard to move, battles. Like, and the other guys are all talented. Van Riemsdyk, the kid who scored the two goals.
Nazem Kadri.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're forward. They're loaded up front. They got forwards all over the ice. They're just wave after wave, they're forwards. They're going to be a handful for the Bruins.
Okay. So there's that. Let me do this. Adam in Plymouth, he wants to weigh in on that goaltender interference. Go ahead, Adam.
You know, I'm 100% with you guys here. You guys talked about the team complaining as well as the, you know, the Nesson broadcast and stuff. It extends to the fans, too. Everywhere on social media, everybody's complaining. That was just a hockey play. McAvoy got bumped off the puck, fell into the goalie, and there was absolutely no goaltender interference. And for any Bruins fan to say that reverse, we wouldn't be upset, is just completely fooling themselves in line.
Just ridiculous. Come on, it was a hockey play. Exactly right. You lost the physical battle in front of the net.
That's exactly what it is. McAvoy tries to initiate contact. He lost.
He did. He got knocked on his ass.
That's it.
Yeah, and in the early part of that game, the very early part of the game, the Bruins were better at it. Like, there was one play in particular. Carlo knocked someone on his ass. I thought, oh, okay. They're tightening it up there. And then by late in the game, it was a disaster again.
So if you want to say that you don't know what goaltender interference is anymore, okay, that I'll give you. Right, well, but, and, you know, it's just like the NFL catch rule. Yep. You know why? Because of effing replay. How many times do I have to say this? And how many times do you have to be, you know, instant replay does not clarify anything. No matter how clear the shot, no matter how good the high definition, it doesn't make these things any more clear. And now we've seen it a million times in a million different examples. But here's now the hockey example. Because of instant replay, you no longer know what goalie interference is. Just like because of instant replay in the NFL, you no longer know what a catch is. When you slow it down and you get a good enough angle, the ball always moves. There's always someone in front of the goalie. There's always some sort of impediment there in the crease. If you stop it and slow it and reverse it enough, you'll find it. You keep looking at an MRI, you'll finally find something wrong with somebody. Just keep looking at the thing. So keep replaying stuff and keep getting better angles, and you keep seeing things you weren't meant to see, and at the end of the day, you have no idea what's what. And this is the problem with replay. they've gone too far with replay and everything, and the goaltender interference is now one of the things. Jaffe was talking about it, that a month ago, they were going with a more strict interpretation. Now they're letting the judgment stand, sort of like in the NFL. They decided, oh, in the Super Bowl, let's just change how we look at these catches, and now we really need clear and irrefutable evidence. So that, was it Clement? What was the kid's name?
Who's, yeah, Corey Clement.
Corey Clement, that touchdown is now going to stand. Even though all year it didn't stand, because we just sort of changed our standards here in the last game. And now I guess the NHL recently has changed their standards on what's goalie interference. Of course you don't know what it is. I agree with that, but that's effing replay. Just don't tell me, though, that that goal should not count. That goal should count. If that's the league where a goal like that doesn't count, then please, that's a joke.
I told you in real time watching, it didn't occur to me that there should have been interference on the play. Like, I just watching it. And honestly, when you watch the replay, Rass should have had it.
Rass still should have had it. He still should have had it.
He should have had it. I mean, it went right by his glove. He should have had it.
Okay, you can add that to the list if you want. We're mostly Nash. We're mostly J.D. Martinez. And we're mostly the Rob Gronkowski tweet. Again, did he come up with this his own, Jimmy? Or is this some sort of wrestling proverb?
I presume that he came up with it on his own. There's no proverb that I'm aware of.
Yeah. A wrestling proverb.
Foresee your own future, control your own temptations, and your destiny will not just be reached, it'll just be starting. And again, I've cleaned it up a little bit there. That's not a wrestling proverb?
I Googled it, too, to see if it was from a book or anything like that, and nothing popped. So no, I have to imagine it's from a fortune cookie.
No, because usually when you see those at the bottom, it says, like, you know, Sir Isaac Newton, Nostradamus. Not Gronk.
Brother Love.
Captain Lou Albano.
Telling you.
Bobby Heenan.
Translation, I'm out.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.